This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Good afternoon. This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be episode 117 of Within the Trenches. Now, a lot has happened in the past few weeks, as I keep saying. Also, before I forget, this episode is sponsored by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. I posted a video yesterday, actually late last night, or the night before. See, my days are all mixed up now because there's so much stuff that's been going on. But I posted this video that gives an update on the hashtag #IAM911 movement. And within that video and that update, it gives the numbers from all the people that have been posting and sharing the stories. You know, this whole reclassification thing has really started to, ramp up, and there's only 5 days left for the public, for public comments. So we got to keep pushing with this, keep it trending on Twitter and on Facebook. And, you know, these stories are, they're important. They need to be out there. And that's what's going on with this movement. So in that video, I will put a link on the post for this episode so that you can check that out. Make sure to watch it, share it. There's also a part in there where I address this change.org petition that's been started in the name of the hashtag #IAM911 movement. Unfortunately, that petition is not affiliated with the movement that I started. Although I appreciate the effort and the help, it kind of goes against what we're trying to do. What we wanted to do was to share the stories of dispatchers to show how we differ from commercial dispatchers and clerical workers. You know, this is an effort to assist both APCO and NINA. And by starting a petition, in my opinion, if we were to do that, that only looks as if, you know, we're going up against them, and we're not trying to do that. We're trying to assist here. So from there, you know, as I was saying, there's 5 days left before the window for the public comment closes. So keep posting your stories on Facebook as well as Twitter. And please go to the websites of APCO and NINA to provide them with the data that they need to send off to the OMB for reclassification. Now, with that said, today I have a special guest, and I want to thank her so much for coming onto the podcast. This is going to be awesome. Today's guest is a former public safety telecommunicator, and she is currently the U.S. representative for California's 35th District, Congresswoman Norma Torres. How's it going?
It's going great, Ricardo. Thank you so much for this opportunity to be on your show and also share my experience as a 911 dispatcher, also known as Operator 432 at LAPD.
All right. Awesome. That's cool. I was just going to ask you, where did you start out? So LAPD, huh? So how did you start out with dispatching? Did you have family in public safety, or did it just come about?
Absolutely not. I had no idea what I was getting into. I was one of about 1,200 people that showed up and took the test at Hollywood High School. And 26 of us were hired back in 1991. The city had stopped hiring 911 dispatchers because of budgetary constraints. Mm-hmm. And our class was the first class that they hired in about 3 or 4 years. So I had no idea, though. It wasn't until orientation that I realized what I was getting into when I was giving not only the police manual, but also the department manual. And I was told that, you know, it would be a lengthy process of studying both of those and learning about local, state, and federal laws in order to do my job. I think that is something that people just really don't understand how much training goes into doing this job. And as normal citizens going around our, about our business, the first time we dial 911 is, you know, oftentimes not, you know, the most positive time in our life. It is, we're not calling because we're having a great day. We're calling because there is something very serious happening.
Right.
And all of us want to make sure that we have the best trained person, you know, answering our call.
Now, when you started out, back then, I mean, what was it like for you? So you say that you had no idea what you were getting yourself into. Was it, I mean, were there a lot of monitors? Was it just the volume of the calls that were coming in? I mean, what was it like?
For me, it was more about the training. It was the amount of information that I had to learn within a very short period of time. Before I could actually go onto the 911 floor and start taking calls or start dispatching, you know, doing one of the four different positions that LAPD has identified for 911 dispatchers.
Oh man, that takes me back because I remember when I first started as well. It was all memorization. You know, you've got all this information, and my first call that I had taken, luckily it wasn't anything high priority. But when I first started, I go in the first night, and I'm there with my trainer. His name was Harry, and he ends up taking a phone call, and I'm watching him, you know, I'm observing this, and he goes, okay, well, it's your turn now. And I said, what? And he goes, yeah, you've got the next phone call. And I thought, oh man, I thought, well, what about all this stuff I have to memorize? He goes, as long as you have common sense, you're okay. I thought, oh wow. Okay.
And this is exactly what I try to address when I was first elected in 2008 to the California State Assembly, is the fact that depending on, you know, where you are, training varies among dispatchers. You could have, like I did, you know, 6 months of training, and then you're put on probation. Now it's more like, you know, 12 months of training and 6 months of probation. Or you could just, like you, be thrown, you know, there, and you're answering calls, and you're, you know, while you're learning basically a new language. You know, for me, having to learn the codes, the LAPD codes that they use is very different than the 10 code or anything else that, you know, other agencies are using.
Yeah, I think that's one of the big differences from then and now. And I say that because when I was getting towards the end of my dispatching career, some of the newer equipment, I mean, all of the 10 codes, all of, you know, the codes to, you know, for classification of like domestic or disorderly or something, that was all saved in there. However, when I had first started out, I had to memorize all of those to type those in. So then when our CAD system would go down, I remember some of the newer people that it would come on would say, well, I don't remember what that was. And I would kind of look at him and say, you didn't memorize it?
Right.
Where do we go from here?
I have to memorize everything too.
Yeah. And it just streamlines it. I mean, because, you know, you're able to do it a lot faster by memorizing. But when you're depending on certain things, it's for example, it's like a smartphone. I have my smartphone, but I feel like it makes me dumb because I used to be able to remember everything. Now I have it right there. And then I only remember like a few phone numbers. So it's the same way, you know, with public safety.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, do you remember any of your earlier phone calls that you had taken? Anything that kind of stuck with you?
Absolutely. And, you know, I often talk about this one particular call that changed my life completely and really threw me into a political life that I never thought I would ever be a part of. And that is, you know, when an 11-year-old girl was murdered, and her murder unfolded in my ears from the time the call came through and I answered it, you know, hearing her screams and the thumping of her head being bashed against the wall, and then, you know, followed by five shots, and having to dispatch not only officers, but also dispatching the paramedics to respond to the scene. It was a very impactful call for me. It changed me completely. Having to go to court after that and listen to the tape, having to translate the tape that very night for the detectives was life-changing. To hear screams that you think are screams, but in reality they were words. And her words were, "Uncle, please don't kill me. It's not my fault." That is something that stays with you, you know, your entire life.
See, and that's definitely things that, you know, like you said, that people don't understand. That's one of the main reasons for the I Am 911 movement, is to let people in on what dispatchers actually go through. Because I remember when I was in there, a lot of people, well, not a lot, but, you know, you've got those certain callers that would call in and have, you know, they think they, you know, this obligation, or they just have an attitude. I'll put it that way. They have an attitude. And specifically one person, and I know I mentioned it before, but in a previous episode, but, you know, this person told me, you're just a dispatcher. You just answer the phone. I you know, I pay for your wages. And I'm thinking, excuse me, sir, but I just helped someone with CPR and that person died on the phone with me. You have no idea.
Right. Do you remember the first time you helped to deliver a baby? I mean, you know, those memories when you're talking, you know, the mother through childbirth, and then you hear the baby's first cries. I mean, that is, you know, those are wonderful experiences. But 911 dispatchers, I don't necessarily think that we remember the good stories and the good endings. We tend to focus on you know, the really bad stuff that happens, because we are trying to work through these very traumatic incidents with our callers and trying to reassure them that we are there to help them and that we are sending them help, although it may seem like help is never coming. You know, we are, and we it's a part of our job to keep them on the phone, because just like that little girl, you know, you might be the only witness to their crime, you know, to something tragic that might happen to them.
Yeah, exactly. I fully agree with that, because I know when I was working in dispatch, I would come home and my wife would ask me, how was work? And I would say, well, it was kind of a hard day. And I would tell her, you know, all of these hard calls that I had taken, because I needed to get it off my chest. And I realized only when I was at a party with a bunch of officers, because we all became very close. I mean, you know, the camaraderie there, it was amazing where I worked. So we would hang out with these officers and stuff, and we're at a cookout, and I start telling a funny story. And actually, I had two or three funny stories. And my wife, you know, she hits me on my arm, and I said, what did I do? And she goes, how come you tell me all of the bad ones? Why don't you tell me a good one?
You know, it's My staff is laughing, because whenever people ask me to tell them a 911 story, I always respond by saying, do you want to hear a funny story? Do you want to hear a sad story? Or do you want to hear a sexy story? Because I've heard it all. And raising my children, you know, I would always refer back and say, there is absolutely nothing that you can say to me that I have not heard before. And, you know, dealing with us, our families and our spouses, this job really hardens us. I remember when, you know, a time when my husband was a victim of a robbery, and he was robbed at gunpoint, and he called the house to tell me that, you know, he had been robbed, his wallet and, you know, everything was stolen. But he was okay. So in my mind, you know, when I listened, you know, to his message, you know, he was okay. So I went about my business like nothing had happened.
Right.
he expected a different reaction from his wife. And when he saw me later that day, he was so upset with me, because he thought, look, I am not just a caller on the other side of the phone. I'm your spouse. You're supposed to care about what happens to me. And I, you know, try to reassure him, I do care about you, but I don't know. The only way that I could deal with that stressful situation that you were in was by putting myself back at the 911 center and thinking and in hearing that you were okay and everything else, you know, could be replaced as long as you're okay. So those are the types of you know, emotions that people don't realize. We are human beings and we care about people. And that is why we do this type of work. But training is necessary. And it is so important that we have, you know, the best tools to do our job.
Right. Exactly. A lot of people, when I was in dispatch, would say, well, you're probably doing this for the paycheck, right? And I'm like, well, not exactly. I'm doing this because I want to help, because if you only knew, you know, dispatchers don't get paid a lot of money. So it's definitely not for the money.
Yeah. And my very first shift on the floor was graveyard. You know, I started at 11 p.m. and finished my shift at 7:30 a.m. And I ended up really liking that shift, that or mid p.m.s. And the reason why, you know, I worked those hours is because I had young children and I, you know, it would allow me some time to help at the school and be home with my boys and, you know, pretend I was also a stay-at-home mom when I was really working, you know, very, very hard.
Well, I'm right there with you with the midnight shift. I loved midnight shift, and people would say, oh, so how's work been going? I'd say, well, sometimes it's kind of boring. And they would say, well, isn't that a good thing? And then I'd say, well, not for me, because I want to help. So, you know, the public, they don't always understand it. But, you know, segueing from that now, I mean, this is a perfect segue into one of the main issues, one of the big things going on right now is this reclassification of PSTs or public safety telecommunicators with the OMB or the Office of Management and Budget to be switched from office administrative or clerical to the protective class. Now, this all started out, of course, as you know, with APCO. You know, they started this out. The OMB ended up rejecting it. APCO ended up going out to people and saying, you know, we need your data. We need you to share stories. And Nina kind of jumped in there as well, trying to help out for, you know, for this whole effort. And then I came in out of left field with the story piece of this to help tell the stories of dispatchers with the I Am 901 movement. So we're all, you know, pretty much unified trying to get this reclassification done. But you added a very important piece to this in this fight in the form of a letter that went directly to the OMB. And for those who don't know about the letter that you ended up sending out, if you could give just a short overview of what you had said in it.
Absolutely. I talked about in the letter, I talk about the training aspect of the work. I talk about, you know, the different types of testing and that they have to go through. I talk about their training and their ongoing training, I should say, because it's not the type of job that you can be trained for once and end there. And I talk about, you know, the different types of work that they have to do. For example, they are often the negotiators in a crime scene initially. They talk to suspects, specifically when it comes to domestic violence cases where, you know, one person gets shot. The suspect is usually the person calling, and they are Miranda, 911 dispatchers are Miranda exempt. I was at a Homeland Security meeting where I talked to the FBI director and said, you have to include 911 dispatchers in your training, the training that you do and provide for our first responders. You know, they are talking to suspects, they are talking to victims of crime, and the more information they are able to draw, you know, the more information that you will have available to identify potential terrorists, you know, in our community. And therefore, this letter, I think, really talks about that very unique work that they do. And in, you know, from my perspective, it puts a personal experience to the job. And I hope that with that attention that OMB will do the right thing and not deny 911 dispatchers, you know, what they deserve.
Definitely. And I thank you very much for sending that out to them. It's a huge thing and a very important piece, as I said before. And, you know, going into the wrap up of this episode, you know, some final thoughts here. Let's just say, you know, the OMB ends up rejecting this reclassification request once again, you know, once the time for or the window for public comment has closed, which is coming up in 5 days here. If they reject that reclassification again, where do you think we go from here? What do you think would be the next step?
We are. We have been discussing that as it relates to legislation that I could introduce, you know, to help this movement. Obviously, in Congress, it's very difficult to, you know, get any legislation passed. That is a lengthy process, and I would prefer that the OMB make this final change in a way that, you know, would be positive for the dispatchers. I hope that we do not have to introduce legislation, but, you know, from my perspective, I think that would be the next step if denied.
Excellent. And I think with your support and the support really from around the world, I think, and with the news media that has also picked this up, there have been numerous news stories that have gone out talking about the I'm 911 movement and how this push for reclassification is going and how dispatchers, you know, want to be seen as those frontline players rather than, you know, just on the side, because we are the first responders, as, you know, as cliche now as it may sound, but that's the truth. That's what dispatchers are. They're right there, and their job is very important. So I'm hoping as well, you know, and along with your help, which I thank you again, that the OMB will see that. Thank you again, Congressman Torres, for being on the podcast. I appreciate this very much.
Thank you, Ricardo, and I hope the general public has an opportunity to read through some of those stories that have been highlighted through the I Am 911 movement to really get a feel what 911 dispatchers do every single day in our communities. And once they do that, I know that we will have their full support, and anything that they can do to be a part of this movement, I want to encourage them to get involved.
Excellent. Thank you once again. And for those who want to follow Congressman Torres on Twitter, her handle is at Norma J. Torres. And the letter that she ended up submitting to the OMB is within those tweets. What I'm going to end up doing is I'll get the link and I will post it on the blog post that ends up going with this episode. And for those who are listening, if you have any comments or questions, or you want to be a guest on the show, you can email WTTpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. And once again, there's 5 days left for the public comment. So if you want to get your story in there, whether it be by meme or text, send it to our inbox. My excellent team is working on pushing all of those stories out, as well as on Twitter. That's at 901 Podcast. You can share your stories. You can mention us. You can also retweet, and just make sure to use the hashtag #IAM911. And if you know, for all of these episodes, for this one and every single one of the podcast, you can listen 24/7 on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play Music, SoundCloud, iHeartRadio, and thejabberlog.com. And finally, again, this episode is sponsored by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. Thank you very much. Have a good one.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to WTTpodcast@gmail.com.